deep in the heart of the Welsh valleys, a young man had a deceptively young and unfathomably handsome man had decided that it was his destiny to become the greatest dog agility handler the world had ever seen. So he set about learning his craft. His front crosses were crisper than a dry December morning in the Brecon Mountains. His catchkers were slicker than a boiled pigeon in a rubber tube sock. The intensity, accuracy and speed and natural flamboyance he brought far surpassed anything the sport had ever seen and would ever likely see again. The time was approaching where he would be ready to shine on the world stage and begin his legacy. But he realized, to win any battle, you must first know your enemy.
Welcome along, everyone, and this week we have my co-presenter of The Wrong End of the Tunnel as a Know Your Enemy guest. So all these weeks where Dave has been talking about different subjects, in today's episode we're going to be talking more about Dave and his background and his experience and his opinions. Hopefully it'll give you a chance to get to know Dave a little bit better. That's the idea behind all of these podcasts. Before we get into today's podcast, I want to take this opportunity to remind you, registration to the Academy will open in the first week of January. So for anyone who is interested, make sure to keep an eye on my Facebook page and I will put the details there when registration opens. We have something for everyone, no matter your age, your weight, your fitness level, your experience. There are courses for anything that you want to improve on within the fitness realm. And there is help with nutrition, mental management, and lots more other topics. If you want more information, send me a message, but keep an eye out on Karma Fitness Wales Facebook group. Enjoy the episode, guys. All right, and welcome along for another episode of Know Your Enemy. A little bit of a twist this week, because this week we have my fellow presenter of The Wrong End of the Tunnel, David Munnins, or Dave Munnins. What do you prefer?
Well, Dave, my friends have taken to calling me David these days because my mother does, and it's really stuck, especially Martin. Yeah. But yeah, Dave is what I go by, unless it's my mother.
Right, so we know who you are. So how would you describe yourself then to someone who doesn't know you today?
So if I was to describe myself to someone like who didn't do agility or didn't know me, I would just say, I'm a weird dog guy, likes to play around with a lot of dogs. Has a lot of dogs, has crazy amount of dogs. Like, you know, you tell people you've got 12 dogs in the house, they think you're nuts straight away. And I do have to explain that I'm a clean freak and the house doesn't stink with dog all the time because I'm cleaning all the time. And that I do mostly, I'd say I was an online instructor more than anything these days. That's where I earn most of my money, I suppose, just doing online stuff. And that's what I like to do these days because I can stay at home with my dogs, don't have to go away and teach so much. But yeah, I would just say I was a dog agility instructor. Obviously, I've got other things that I have done in the past, like I'm an osteopath and trained as that, but I don't really practice anymore. But yeah, that's what I would tend to. And obviously, with the new Nexus stuff, I would say we were event organizers is what the plan is going to be.
Yeah, cool. That's something we will definitely get on to later in the conversation. But first, I want to go back to kind of the start for you. So what got you interested, firstly, in dogs in general? Did you always have dogs growing up in your family? And then what made you get into the training and the agility side of things?
I always was obsessed with dogs. I wanted a dog my whole life. My family had dogs, but I wasn't allowed one. But until I got to 12, my mum was like, oh, the lady down where we kept our horses at was having a little litter of spaniels. And so she let me have one, and I was just obsessed instantly. I just loved everything to do with owning a dog. I loved it. I walked it. I fed it. I did everything with her. She was literally my absolute hard dog. And then I was obviously into horses anyway, so I did a lot of show jumping. I worked at a show jumping yard for a bit. I've been riding my whole life, had horses my whole life, and so it was kind of a natural progression. Mum took me to like an agility class, and instantly I was hooked. I just loved. I always used to try and make my dogs jump in the back garden. I think a lot of people used to do that when they're kids. I just loved it from the beginning, and I was hooked instantly. And then Mum was like, she was obviously wanting me to be very competitive all the time, and she was a very competitive mother, and so she started to thought I needed a border collie because they seemed to do better. So then that was it. Once first got my first rescue collie, and just went from there, really.
And what what was your kind of intro into the world of dog agility? Where did you start? Did you start at a club? Did you start with a person?
Yeah. Just a little club called Sandleford at the time, a local club in Newbury. I think they're still going these days. I'm not actually sure. Then I joined another club. I got invited to join Crazy Maisie, which was Joe Fraser at the time. They were really big when I started getting better. I got noticed a bit more, and they invited me to join their club, which at the time was such a massive thing to be asked to join Crazy Maisie Club. It was like the biggest club around. They did so good. I was literally so excited. I couldn't wait to wear their jumper and their t-shirt and act like I was part of the club. And then just from there, just snowballed and got more dogs, got given a really good dog, Billy, who was came from a friend. Actually, I didn't own him from the start. He was Sophie Macbeth's, actually, and she went traveling, left him with the Frasers, and I ended up looking after him because they ran out of time or whatever, and then he just never left, and he was my first dog that I really started doing very well with. He was a really cool boy, but he wasn't mine at the beginning.
So with regards to like your early days then, as you said, you were in the club was called Crazy Maisies, was it?
Yeah, Crazy Maisie, that was the name of Ian's dog, was Maisie, and Crazy Maisie was her KC name, so that's what they called their club.
Who was the person who kind of first took you, who do you feel like you learned the most from initially, those early days kind of guiding you and kind of moulding you into the dog trainer that you are? Did you have any idea about dog training specifically before it?
No, I had no interest. So Joe Fraser, who was like the co-owner of Crazy Maisie, Ian's wife, she really helped me so much early on. She was a real inspiration to me. She was going around doing training days. She used to take me on a few training days, and she gave me some amazing advice. I think the best bit of advice she ever gave me was to say, even if you hate the dog, like literally hate it, and you have nothing good to say about it, just say it's got a nice tail or something, because people love to hear something positive about their dogs. And I've always remembered that, because there's always something you can find to like about a dog, even if you think it's awful at agility and it doesn't want to do it, or it's really ugly. It's something. On the whole, I think for 99% of dogs I could find that I would say I liked. And I would try and pick up on things I like about the dog, of course. And generally, I'm just a massive dog lover, so I can always find something. But it's people do want to hear nice things about their dogs. Of course, we all want to hear nice things about their dogs, about our dogs. So I think that was a great piece of advice to become a trainer and someone who is, I think, hopefully quite liked when I go and teach, because I do try and find things I like about the dogs, even if I think their agility isn't probably the best in the world. I want to like something about them.
Well, and like, how many years ago was it you started?
My God, well, that was, oh, wow. Like, you started doing agility was,
yeah, I've
been doing it for like 30 years when I was about 12.
Wow.
So now coming up 30 years.
So it was in black and white.
And it was. I mean, I wish you could just go back and like watch my first agility lessons. I wasn't even allowed a toy with my spaniel. I had to pick up a sneaky bit of straw from the floor. She was obsessed with things to play with. And I would run around with a tiny bit of straw in my hand because I wasn't allowed to play with a toy. When we trained our dogs, you could give them a treat, but toys weren't allowed. It was too crazy. So I used to hide a little bit of straw in my hand that was always on the floor of the indoor arena. And then she'd work perfectly for a little bit of straw.
Well, like, because it was that long ago, obviously dog training in general has moved on a lot since then. But I would say just society has moved on a lot since then as well. So was there any advice you got at the time that you wish you'd ignored?
What, for dog training?
Well, yeah, probably for dog training, I would say, rather than your own personal life.
All sorts of life advice that I should have ignored. Dog training, yeah, I mean, so much. Like, I mean, always be between the judge and the contact. So the judge cannot see the contact. And even if they miss it, say, good boy.
Oh, that's some good advice. I like that.
I still use that these days. I'm still going to start using that, actually. So do that. But dog training just in general, it was much more, punishment's the wrong word, but more, yeah, negative. Positive punishment is right, I suppose. So so people would, you just tell your dogs off more. And I was just not into that. I was always wanted to reward. That's why I would hide the piece of straw. I was always very reward-based. I didn't really get the whole point of, I think I went to one club once where they wanted to put a choke chain. It wasn't for agility, just for obedience stuff. they wanted to put a choke chain on the spaniel, and I did it once and I hated it, so I never went back. I thought, why would you want to strangle your dogs? Like, I've just never really been into that kind of training. I've never liked it, even though I came from a horsey background, which is far more into positive punishment with whips and spurs and everything else, and that is on the horses, nothing else. And
that's why you like it.
that's what I got into all that. But yeah, and even though I came from that world, I never enjoyed doing all that. I never wore spurs. I didn't like carrying a whip, and I never wanted to punish the dogs for stuff. So I think I had very much my own views early on in that respect.
So like you say, you've been competing for a while, and you said Billy was kind of like your first dog that you would say you were successful with. Would that be fair?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. And he was hard work. Like, he came trained, but with lots of bad habits. So we had to change such things. But he was my first agility champion. He was he got a bronze medal at the World Championships. He was just a really cool dog. Never like the crazy. There was always a dog that could beat him. Like, at the time, Tony Dawkins with Kite would always, if she went clear, beat him. He wasn't the fastest, but he had perfect turns, perfect lines. And he was just the most honest, lovely border collie. I loved him so much. He was such a great dog for me. Taught me a lot about dog training.
You've been successful with multiple dogs. How many agility champions have you got? I know you wanted me to ask that, so I thought I'd get it out of the way.
You liar! You fucking liar. I have got 5 or 6.
5 or 6, as if you don't know.
I think it's 6.
Oh, just casually got so many, you can't keep count anymore.
I can't even remember these days, I know. That's age. That is pure age.
Well, you've had a nice haircut, so at least you're looking a bit younger.
Yeah, 6. Thanks.
Okay, so like I said, success doesn't necessarily mean winning medals, but equally, it can definitely mean that. And for some people, it definitely does. Success to you these days, then? What do you class as success? Is it purely medals, or is it something else?
No, it's not. Obviously, my biggest goal would be to win a gold medal. Surely, as everyone who wants to go to world champs, that is it. But if you just stick to that one goal, then it's almost unachievable. You've got to have a bit of luck to be able to win a gold medal. You know, I've been so close, 2 bronzes and a silver. It's so irritating. I just would like to win 1 gold. But, you know, I don't think that's not my biggest aim. Obviously, it's my biggest aim. But if I don't do it, I'm not going to be disappointed, because there's so many other things I want to do. Just owning the dogs I do. I love training my dogs so much. Like, competing's great, but I think the older I get, the more I enjoy the training side of it than the competing side of it. I just, for some reason, just love training my dogs. I'm obsessive about it. That's why I have so many, so I can do lots of little bits, little training sessions, rather than overtrain one dog. Ask the question again.
What do you think is success for you at the moment?
At the moment, I would say success is just going to shows and not being pissed off about how agility is in the UK at the moment, because it does get on my nerves. So that's, for me, personal success is just going to show and still enjoying myself. And just, I suppose, you qualifying for the big events is still a massive thing for me. So if Susan qualifies this year, that'll be a huge success for me. But just coming up with each dog, and just each dog I get, teaching it, or hopefully trying to get the best out of each dog. For me, that is success, because not every dog will be a world champion, and not every dog can even be good enough to compete at the world championship. So just hopefully trying to get the best out of each dog I get. That, to me, is success.
Last season, obviously, Susan had a very good season. She won a cup, 2 tickets or 3?
2 or 3,
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, I'm not actually trying to set you up for a moment here, but I think it was a couple, definitely 2, because you beat me twice.
At least 2,
yeah,
possibly 3,
and obviously qualified for the GB team for the EO, so that was a good season. But yeah. Then, in general, what do you put success down to? Is it the handler? Is it the dog training? Is it the dog?
Very much. A huge part of it is the training, of course. But you do have to have the right dog for it as well. Like, at the end of the day, I couldn't make every single dog an agility champion. It's, you know, I've got Commotion, who has been one of my biggest failures, because I do think he's got a great brain. But for some reason, we just can't get it together. And he does have vision problems. He doesn't see takeoff spots, which stresses me. He's definitely got some sort of depth perception issue, which I think has been a huge part for us because it stresses me out with his jump style so much. But I think that, say the question again. I keep getting distracted.
You keep going off on tangents, don't you? Do you think that...
I do!
Do you think that the success, for like when we're talking about success in this particular scenario, we are talking about in competition, do you think it's mostly down to the training or the dog or the handling?
Okay, so yeah, definitely a huge part of this training. You have to be able to handle, because some of my dogs that I train, not my dogs, but my students' dogs, they've got amazing skills, like better skills than my dogs have got, but they go to a show and they just can't always get together. So that comes down to handling. Can they hold it together mentally? Can they hold it together? Can they do it physically? Can they even just remember the course? Like, you know, a lot of my students just forget when they do 20 obstacles, they just can't remember it. That's menopause, apparently. That's what they keep telling me. Thank God I'm not a woman, because I feel very sorry for women with all these bloody hormones. Horrible things. And I think that, yeah, so training, huge part, but also just having the right dog. Some dogs are just geniuses. They just get it. They just do it. You train it once and they've got it. Other dogs you can repeat. It just doesn't sink in. So even if you're the best trainer in the world, you cannot make every dog amazing. So huge part of it is getting the correct dog. That dog also has to have the right brain for you. You've got to mix and work together and you've got to be able to train it. So that's probably the easier bit, because you can go to people to help you out, but then also be able to handle it when you get to the competition. That's I think is a huge part that people fail on, is just not being able to handle when they get to an actual show.
And I think part of that then comes down, you did briefly mention it, but it's not necessarily the handling that they struggle with, it's the mental side of it, to be able to cope with the pressure. Now I'll say this for you, because I think it's fairly natural for you, but I think you're quite strong mentally with regards to being able to perform in a competition when the stakes are high and all that kind of stuff. So do you ever actually work specifically on that, or is it just something that you've always found that you just can handle kind of thing?
I think I actually get better when there's a bit of pressure, because it puts me, I think I've been doing it so long now that I get a bit complacent with it. So when it's just a normal run, I just want to go clear in. I'm very relaxed, very like, sometimes I almost can't be bothered, because I want to feel that adrenaline rush of the final. It's something I'm actually working on now at the moment, to try and make myself a bit more pushy for just my normal runs, because I get very complacent about it, especially if I'm not a big fan of the course. If I like the course, I'm much more likely to go for it and enjoy it. But if I don't like the course, I just pot around, don't put my effort in, and it's a bad trait that I've got. So I'm trying to work on that. So yeah, and I've never worked on my mental side of it. I enjoy competition. I'm a very competitive person. I get that adrenaline rush and that excitement / fear, whatever you want to call it. Definitely, I would say actually improves me as a handler rather than makes me worse.
Okay, and we've talked about the success and what is like important, but what do you feel is your particular strength?
I think that my timing, and people have always said this, my timing's very good. So even if my dogs don't always have the skill, I haven't trained it well enough, I think I can manage it and time my handling. We used to be able to, hopefully I still can these days if I work on it, that I can still get around the course because my timing with my verbals and my body language is quite good. So I think I'm quite good. I was always very good at gamblers when I used to do some stuff with Greg's organization. And I think that's because I always know where I'm going to be in relation to my dogs and where my dog's going to be at what point on the course. So I'm very good at figuring out where I am in relation, my spatial awareness and my timing, I would say, two of my big strengths.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. When you handle this, is always you're in the right place, almost, where some people struggle with that kind of stuff, don't they? But it's quite interesting because, like, I know the answer to this, but have you got a sporting background? Have you come from another sport, or was it show jumping into dog agility straight away?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I was always very sporty growing up, so I was very good at running. I did a lot of sprinting, a lot of running, not long distance, so I was always good at sprint running. And any kind of racket sports I was pretty good at. I always say this to people, like, if they come from a sporting background, I always find that they definitely have more of an eye for lines, that they can see dogs' lines. If they come from especially a background that involves kicking or hitting a ball, because they can see the line, the ball, or the whatever they're hitting is going to, yes, the trajectory, good word. They can see that line. I do think that really helps, because people that come from that background, definitely not just a running background, but a sporty background where they have to hit or kick something, they definitely see lines better, I would say. And I think I did a lot of that as younger. And also with, obviously with the horses, you have to see a line, so you have to ride the line. So you have to know that the angle, the horse is taking the jump, that if you're going for a fast run, like a jump off, you've got to take the shortest route. So you've got to know how they're going to the water to jump. And see the line around the course, because you actually have to obviously manage the line more when you're on a horse than you do with the dog.
Yeah, well, I would say that, yeah, definitely a lot of people who've come from horse riding have got that advantage with regards to like lead leg changes and all that kind of stuff. I've said it before definitely. As well. I think a massive advantage to people who have come from a sport where they've been heavily coached is the coordination to making coaching cues into actual physical behaviors. Like a lot of people, they can't correlate the two. If someone says, for example, you know, cross with your front to your dog, and like whatever the case may be, they cannot listen to those and then actually do it. I think that is a massive advantage. If you've come from a sport where you have been coached a lot, then I just think you're easier to coach in general.
Yeah, definitely. Some people just easy to teach stuff to, and other people are not so easy. Everyone's trainable. If you can figure out, a good instructor or a good coach will figure out what makes that person understand what you're saying. And I think I'm quite good at that, because I can generally explain it to most people. But some people are dead easy. They've got it before you even finish saying the sentence. Other people need you to repeat a few times before it's going to sink in.
Yeah. So let's look forward a bit now. In agility, as we like the last few years for definite, like things have changed quite a lot with regards to, I think, what we're asking of our dogs, number one. But in general, I just think a lot is changing with regards to the top level competition as well. What, you know, moving forward, you guys have started your own, would you call it a federation, organization?
Organization, I suppose we'd call it. Yeah.
So you're starting your own organization. So where would you like to see agility move towards? What are you looking for when you're starting this new organization?
We're just looking for more of a modern style. Like the Kennel Club shows, I'm not saying they're all bad. Jesus, I mean, I love a lot of the shows I go to, but there's still just the size of the rings, the course design, judges, you know, and I'm not saying it's their fault, but they're not trained in this country. They get very little training, which is what we want to do in Nexus, is really work on teaching the judges how to course design. And then we're also going to make sure every course gets checked before it goes out. And if every course gets helped, someone at every show to help set the courses up to make sure the lines are good. We're just trying to make it safer, because dogs have got so much faster, courses have got so much faster. We're trying to make it safer for the dogs and more enjoyable, because I think on the whole, most people that me, all of my friends train, are training the more modern style course, which is slightly more open, a bit more spread out, maybe it'll be a bit faster. And I think then if people are going to shows and they're not getting the kind of courses we're actually training them. So I'm hoping that what we're going to achieve is getting people to actually enjoy their agility more, and actually their dogs are seeing what they're seeing at training more, rather than more the slightly older fashioned style of course. And the Kennel Club agility is slowly improving. It's not like it's terrible. Lots of things have improved, but I do think there's room for another organization that can hopefully bring it even more into modern day agility, what I see as modern day agility.
There are, like, I know of a couple of different rules that you've got within the organization. So if you could change one rule in the KC, is there one particular that stands out that you think needs changing the quickest?
The quickest? It's more general course design. But if there was one particular rule, it would be the distances on jumps. I think a few other people said that too, and it would be the same for me. No. The short distances for large dogs, especially small dogs, not so important, but definitely for larges, some of the distances are so dangerous. And it really does freak me out that they can just go from a massive distance to a short distance. And that's absolutely fine, because it's just unbearable. And also, well, I'm going to say two rules, that and also the curvature of tunnels. Tunnels can be curved too much, and I hate seeing dogs go into tunnel and just smash into the back wall of it. Yeah. So tunnel curves and distances would be my two, and then two things we've looked into a lot when we've done our Nexus rules.
Yeah, I agree with both those rules as well. I mean, from my point of view, I prefer it to be, as you've said. The one that I always think would be a good one, and someone mentioned it on here, and I think it was Martin. He always gets a shout out from us, doesn't he? I think it was Martin. But I didn't even think of this as being a rule, but I thought it would solve so many things with regards to what I would consider a less exciting course design, in that a jump cannot be repeated within five jumps.
That's my rule.
Well, I like that rule as well. I think that's
One of our rules. Well, that is a rule in FCI, and that's one of our big rules for Nexus, because it produces more of a flowy course rather than a circular course.
Yeah, I'm not a judge, so I wasn't aware of that as an FCI rule, and I think it was Martin who brought it up, and I just thought that would solve so many problems with regards to course design.
It would force people to design
more exciting courses, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it really would. And I bring it up so much when we do our Love the Lines presentations, but a lot of people still aren't really understanding. Like, they can repeat tunnels, but repeating jumps within four or five of another jump just creates a lot of circles, a lot of people standing still rather than those longer flowing courses you see abroad. And that's something I do not do. I try my absolute hardest not to do when I'm done a course, is never to repeat a jump within four of itself. So then you just get those flowier, longer courses. It's just nicer for the dogs rather than people standing in the middle and just doing circles.
Yeah.
I don't want to run. I'm not a running handler. I want to. But what they don't understand is the dogs will like it so much better, and you'll actually so much better even as a distance handler with those longer flowing courses. But yeah, because they haven't seen it, or they haven't seen it yet and they haven't trained it yet, they don't realize that. But I can promise you that they would enjoy it more.
Yeah, and this is, again, you know, they're not going to know until they try. And a lot of people who, and like, we'll use Iconics as an example, because I'd say that that's kind of leading the way at the moment. And like a lot of people who end up going to Iconics have said they have avoided it for a long time because they were worried and all that kind of stuff. And then at the end of the weekend, they've loved it. They've loved the challenge.
I know.
And that's what it's about, I think, is it's about challenging yourself. So absolutely. As we're on course design, then, who are your favorite judges with regards to course design, and then who are some judges whose courses you love to run?
So definitely, obviously I had to bring up Neil, my fellow Nexus business partner, let's call him. His courses these days are really cool. Make sure you train a throttle wrap, because that will be in every single one of his courses. He does love a throttle wrap. Daniel Waltz, I think his courses are amazing. Yoke, his courses are amazing. Hugo's courses at Gold Rush this year was so fun. So was Stephanie's, to be honest. I really enjoyed both of their courses. Looking at, but I wish I could have been there and run them, but couldn't go because of boss. And they're the one. And obviously Tamas, I think, is one of the best judges in the absolute world. So they're the guys that I would always look out for. There are others as well, but those ones really stand out to me.
Yeah. I think the only one that... There are a lot on there. So it's a bit... You don't want to name some, because you know that there'll be some that, for example, I know you love Jan's courses and you didn't mention him. So like, there's loads of people like that as well, aren't there? That, like,
loads.
I like Ivan Almarez.
Oh my God, Ivan! I forgot Ivan. Oh, I love Ivan's courses, and my little tiny brother. Oh my God.
They are good. Alejandro.
Alejandro.
I was going to say, you have got a song with him, haven't you, Alejandro or whatever. So let's look at, again, as we're looking into the future then, what are some future goals for you with Susan? And then obviously you've got your youngster, 40. How old is she now?
14 and a half months.
Okay, so this year she will hopefully come out into competition.
Yes, Scunthorpe hopefully will be, as long as I actually get her trained, her first show. She'll definitely hopefully be doing jumpings by then.
Cool.
So my aims with Susan this year would be to qualify for... the world events, so EOs and AWC. I would try out for AO as well, but I don't feel like I can keep her fit enough for all three events. I think it's just too much for her physically. Not because I disagree with the event, I would love to go, but I just can't keep her fit enough for all three events. I think I would burn her out through the year. So, because I want them to be at such peak fitness for the events. So qualifying for those. Also just, win some more tickets. I would love to win some more tickets with her. And just, to be honest, just build up her confidence, because she's such a funny, nervous little thing. And I work so hard on her being confident around the shows. And I have to be on edge the whole time to make sure no dogs are barking at her or they jump out at her. Like, the whole time I'm just watching, trying to protect her from being scared, because one thing will scare her and she'll shut down for the whole time. Like, the dog doesn't have to be directed at her, but if the dog barks weird or is a spook bark, that puts her into a kind of sort of state of just being nervous, and then she won't run the same. So confidence with her, that's a big aim for me, and obviously the events if I can get there. But like I said, it's not the be all and end all. I would love to go because I just love the whole atmosphere, everything about them, and being part of the team. I love it. But if we don't get there, we don't get there. But I will try my hardest because it is enjoyable.
Yeah, that's the goals, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't matter if...
If you could then... Let me just talk about 40 quickly. I didn't bring her up.
Yeah, well, I thought you were saying that you just wanted to bring her out this year. So I thought that was it, but no problem. What are her goals?
Yeah, I do. Her goals are just to have so much fun with her because she's so perfect. She's just a cool dog. She's very much my style of dog. She's really pushy. She's not nervous of things. She's just a really cool dog, and bring her out. But I'm going to be very selective on what courses I run along. She's very fast, and I don't want to freak her out with some of our UK style younger dog courses. I think she could really damage herself if they're too tight. So I'm going to be very selective on which judges I run her under, what shows I go to. Looking forward to iconic shows with her. I'm really excited to bring her out this year and see how she goes. It's always exciting bringing out a new dog.
Yeah. Just talking about dogs, then obviously you're not doing another one for a while, but if you could steal a dog, let's say steal one from every height, what ones would you take? Is there any that come to mind immediately?
For intermediate, I've been watching a lot. I love Danny Fishback, and her young dog, Salty, is so cool. I think for that height, I would love to steal her. I think she's incredible. For large, there's so many good large dogs. I'm going to say I would steal one, a dog we bred that people won't know, but I would steal Hustle.
Yeah.
We bred him, and little Ellie Curtis has him. I just think he's one of the most talented dogs I've ever trained. He turns, he doesn't want to take poles, he extends, he's fast. So, not a dog lots of people would know, but I would love to have him. If he was my dog, I'd be super happy. He's so cool, and Ellie has done such a good job with him. Such an amazing little dog. So, for large, I would steal him. Small and medium, I'm not so good with my small and mediums. Medium, maybe Endeavour. I think someone else said her. She's such a cool little border collie. There are some others. I also, you know what I love? Maggie from Liz's dog, Maggie. She's such a cool little dog. She just runs so beautifully, and she's really cool. So if she'd run for me, she probably wouldn't. I don't know how much she likes me. But she's a cool, I train her quite a lot, and she's a really cool little dog. Small, I think I would, right now, looking at how it is, I would like to steal Shannon's new puppy. She's Lumi. A really cool little Sheltie.
Yeah.
Lulu.
How old is she?
She's, I think that's like a month younger than 40. She must be about 13 months.
Okay, so she'll possibly be out this year as well.
Yes, I think she's got a lot of potential to be a cool dog, and obviously Shannon will train her so well. So I think, I would pinch her at the moment. She's a really cool dog.
Cool. All right, well, we're going to go into the more real-life questions then. And the one I always start off in this section is, what do you feel people misunderstand about you the most?
That's a good one, because I think a lot of people think I'm very rude. And I am rude, but not on. But that's only when I want to do it on purpose. The other times I'm rude. People think it shows. I'm so focused at shows. People think I don't want to talk to them. So I think people think I ignore them, and I don't ignore people on purpose. I'm actually, and people never believe it, I'm a really shy person. I would never just walk up. I don't expect people to want to talk to me. Unless people talk to me. I tend to not, unless I know them very well, I wouldn't just go up to them and talk to them. Like, even if people are in a crowd, if my friends are in a crowd of people I don't know, I get quite nervous walking into that crowd because I think, oh, they're probably busy. I don't want anything to do with me. So I'm definitely, people think I'm rude to show, so I don't talk to them, but it's not because I don't want to talk to them. It's because I just feel like, you know, everyone's busy doing their own thing. They probably don't want to stand still and have a conversation with me. So that's definitely a huge thing. People always say that about me, that, oh, you don't talk to me at shows. Well, it's that one, I'm focused on my own dogs if I'm running them, especially Susan, because she's a little bit weird. So I've got to be really careful with her. And two, I just don't want to bother people. Very much like I don't want to bother, put people out to have time to talk to me if they're busy doing their own thing. So that's a huge misconception on me, is that I'm rude. I'm actually just a bit shy sometimes.
What are you most proud of then?
Most proud of, actually, I think having, not rather than individual results, is having had a lot of dogs having good results. I think I'm most proud about my consistency with multiple dogs and actually working with dogs that have been hard, and all my colleagues have been easy. A lot of them have been nervous. A lot of them have been not so pushy. And I've hopefully got the best out of nearly all of them. The ones that are definitely physically sound, I think I've got the best out of them. So I'm very proud of, but I've been doing well for a long time. I still think I might be the only person that's got 3 medals with 3 different large dogs. Because it's hard to be consistent for so long and have multiple medals with different dogs. Lots of people have one good dog, not lots of people have multiple good dogs. But I'm sure someone will do it soon if they haven't already. So I might not be the only one. That might sound so arrogant, but that's okay.
I'm definitely leaving that in. I'm going to try and find out if that is the case. And if it isn't, I'm going to flash up some text saying,
if it
liar,
isn't, someone's
going
to come on and go, you're a liar. You're not that good. Everyone's better than you. that's what I'm most proud of.
You said about the fact that, like, your medals have been with a large dog. Do you see a different height dog in your future, or will you stick with collies only? I know you've got Boost, but I'm talking one that you could go to, like, the AWCs with me.
I'm not saying I won't. I just love watching border collies work. I'm getting intermediate. I'm loving intermediate border collie, but they keep growing too big. I'm not saying I wouldn't, but I've got so many dogs, and right now it's not in my plan. I just love watching border collies, and not that I dislike watching other breeds run, but just border collies just really, they just do it for me. They just look good running. I love watching it. I think it's, you know, and this is probably going to come across wrong, but I do think it's harder in large because you've got to, an intermediate, because you've got to watch the lines more. Smaller, medium are a little bit easier if they turn well, because you can just sort of chuck and go. You don't have to worry so much about the dog's line. You don't have to worry about so much about the course design. So not saying I'm not doing it because it's easy. I would like to do it, but I just, it hasn't, especially running Boost, hasn't meant as much to me winning with Boost as it has winning with the large dogs. Partly because he's part collie, and partly because I actually forget more pleasure winning with him because I think he's been such hard work, and I'm the one that has to bloody live with the little bastard. The agility's actually been the best thing about him. Living with him has been hard, and that's what I'm more proud of, is that I had to put up with him, living with him and managing his very strange and aggressive tendency.
What are your biggest fears then? I mean, I know spiders, but is there anything else?
Spiders and sharks. Anything that could kill me, to be honest. So, I've got a fear of death.
That's not a phobia then, though, is it? Because that's quite a sensible fear. No one really wants to
die. Yeah, I think it's a sensible fear. All these people do ridiculous things. I think, you're going to die. It's like swimming with sharks. Who wants to swim with sharks? I'm sorry, but there is a risk involved in that. You might get eaten. No. So biggest fear is also, I suppose, in agility terms, a fear of failure as well. Just being crap, not being good anymore. That scares the shit out of me.
Well, you should be all right with 40. I've seen her go in. She should carry you. She'd carry you for a few more years.
She'll carry me through. She'll make me look good for a few more years, yeah.
Let's talk music then. What is your preferred type of music? And then what is the first concert you ever went to? Have you ever been to a concert?
No, I've never, ever been to a concert.
Are you lying?
Never. No, never.
Well, firstly. Dan, get him something for Christmas, concert ticket. What type of music are you into?
Would Elton John be called a concert?
Well, yeah, if you played a gig, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, I went to see Elton John quite recently. He was very old, though. Little old man tottering across the stage. I thought, oh, he's cute as hell. But yeah, he's still got a great voice. But yeah, no, it wasn't really a crazy concert. But that's the only one. But my music taste would be very cheesy, very stereotypically gay. You know, all the all the cheesy pop stuff. Imagine Dragons, do love Imagine Dragons. They're not particularly the gay.
But you don't like their music. You like their singer. That's the difference.
That is true. When he takes his top off, I find him very attractive. general cheesy pop chart stuff. Not any weird stuff that you like to listen to.
I just listen to proper music, not stuff that's been written by
a computer. No, not proper music. It hurts my ears. It's like it's just a noise. It's a horrible noise. How can you sing along to that?
What music are you talking about? You don't even know, do you?
I don't know. Stuff you work out to.
Well, that's just, you know, I like what I like and I can't help that. To be honest, right, I feel like you haven't got a say. If you've never been to a musical concert, your opinion is not valid. Doesn't count.
Well, the fact I've got ears, yeah. And I have to go to a concert to listen to music.
No. It's like saying you do agility but never having done a show. Doesn't count.
Oh, that's absolute bullshit. That's absolute bullshit.
Have you got any hobbies outside of agility?
Oh, God, I don't have time for hobbies. No. I mean, I'm trying to go to the gym now. I wouldn't call it a hobby because it's more of a thing I don't want to do, but I do. No, absolutely none. I'm too busy with training the dogs.
Do you collect anything? Any weird collection habits?
Any what?
Like, do you collect anything? Like,
oh, God, no. No. Don't know anything weird like that. I buy stuff. I've got a shopping addiction.
You've got an Amazon addiction. Yeah.
Amazon addiction. That happened over COVID and it's not stopped. I bought 3 things this morning before this thing. Even just cheapy things. I just love going on and just saying, well, that one there.
You get like the dopamine rush of when something's been delivered, don't you?
Yeah, I get a present. Every day I get a present in a little box.
From Who yourself. Doesn't want
that? Yeah, I don't even know what it is. I think, oh, what have I bought today? You love that feeling.
What then annoys you the most? So what makes you really angry?
And the fact that you have got an Egyptian tan and I'm looking really pale.
You are looking a bit pasty. I didn't want to say anything.
That's the first thing that's irritating me today. Look at you looking all tanned.
Yeah.
Don't get your hair. You haven't got your hair out though, have you? Because you're in that in-between awful stage.
It is. It's in the transition mode, but you know. It'll get there.
Annoys me a lot. I mean, if you talk to my friends, they'd say everything annoys me. And that is true. I do get irritated quite easily about little things. But I also get over it quite quick. But people not listening to me, maybe. But you know what annoys me the absolute most is people ignoring text messages or any kind of message that I send them. If they ignore me, I hate being ignored. It's something that drives me up the bloody wall. If someone messes, and I know they've been online because they've posted this, that, and the other, they've ignored my message that I've taken time to send them, makes me livid. So,
who's the biggest culprit?
That I would say. Hey?
Who's the biggest culprit?
Biggest culprit? Nara. Nara.
Named and shamed.
She doesn't answer me. Ignorant cow. I send her a little eye and an emoji of a cow because basically she's being ignorant and ignoring messages. But Thomas Martin's been bad as well recently. So it's those two. It's the Cuddy, whatever his name is, Reeds. Cuddy Reeds.
Maybe they're doing it on purpose to stress you out as a sabotage.
Maybe they've just had enough of me. Yeah. Yeah. They've had enough of me, actually. We're just not friends anymore.
Yeah, take the hint.
Quite enough of me.
They're phasing you out, Dave. You're getting phased out and you don't know it.
Oh, I know. It's because I'm a has-been. As soon as I start doing well again, I'll be back in.
Yeah.
If I start doing well
again. They're world medal winners and you're not. You're not in the crew anymore, Dave.
Well, no, this is it. They've actually gone past me. They literally think I'm not good enough for them anymore.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see about that.
Yeah, we'll see. It's the redemption year for Susan. She's got to get back on.
It better. Come on, Susan.
Back on the team. All right, we're going into the quick fire round now. What did you have for breakfast?
Okay, ready for it.
What do you have for breakfast?
Nothing. Chocolate out my advent calendar. A twirl, a mini twirl.
And a cup of tea. Do you want to show everyone your mug?
Yeah.
Twunt. For those don't people who are just listening, it says twunt, and I'm sure you can work out what words that is.
Two words together, these two. I sent them that to Kurt this morning and said, this is what you are today.
Well, at least it's only one day. Yeah. At least I'm not here every day, I suppose, isn't it? What is the last thing that you Googled?
Well, it would have been something to think something about my bad neck.
Oh yeah, everyone. So, Dave's got a really bad neck. It's an old man neck.
Even holding a hot water bottle to put on it. Oh, I've got such a bad neck. So there's something about some health insurance stuff that I want to go see a doctor about it. So yeah, it was something really boring like that.
Tell everyone how you got your injury. It's really catastrophic. So prepare yourself, people.
I know. While I was doing a very having a very eventful evening of sitting on the sofa, I just turned my head and oh, my neck. So I said, Dan, something's wrong with my neck. He's like, oh, you're only sitting there, you lazy bastard. I was like, no, I've really hurt it. And everything's then 2 days later, I still can't bloody move it. So that is age catching up with me 100%. Can't even turn my neck on the sofa without injuring myself.
You were sitting in a dangerous position.
How depressing. I wish it was something like bungee jumping or doing something or go-karting or something really fun, but no. Sitting on the bloody sofa.
What is your most used emoji?
Eye roll.
Eye roll, yeah. When did you last sing and what song was it?
Oh my God, I've been singing recently a lot. And it was the new Christmas song, Wrap Me Up by Meghan Trainor and what's his name? Honestly, I've learnt the words so well now. And I absolutely love it. Good bit of cheese. And I just find it an really fun song to sing along. I probably played it about 20 times on the trot in the car last time I was in it.
What's the plan for Christmas this year?
I actually having a friend Christmas, so Chloe and Jen are coming over, and Jen's boyfriend or fiance David. So we're just having a friend Christmas. Just going to play games, eat food. Problem is they are veggie and vegan. Oh. I'm not, so I know that's not a problem. But I've now got to figure out how to cook all this food that I would not usually cook. And I'm not the best cook at the best of times. So yeah, we're having a friend Christmas. Chloe did say she might sneakily eat some turkey with me. She
you
might
can't give out it, her. Give you can't out her in public, David. She's a vegan.
Having a day off. She's having a day off.
Okay.
She's allowed a day off. But she might not. I feel bad that I've outed her now. Maybe she won't. Let's pretend she won't.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Yes. Definitely do. I believe in something after life. Can I just tell you the story quickly?
Go on, yeah.
Go on, quick. So I went to see a woman who sort of, apparently, this was years and years ago, I went to see a woman, and she can talk to ghosts, apparently, and she didn't know anything about me at all. Absolutely nothing about me. All she knew was my first name, and I know that because my partner at the time, David, booked me in, and all he told her was my last name, my first name, sorry, not even my last name. And she was like, okay, so I'm getting something from you. And I was so skeptical. I was like, oh, what a load of bullshit. And she instantly said, your dad, I'm getting the name John and something about the Navy. And my dad's name was John and he was in the Navy. Obviously, he died when I was younger. But how could she have known that? There's no possible way. This was like 25 years ago. Like, there's no possible way she could have known. No, about 20 years ago. But no way she could have known those things about me. She didn't even know my last name. How could she have known?
How do you know that she didn't know your last name?
Because I know that David booked it in and he did not say tell her my last name. I know that. And at the time, I'm not even sure how you could have Googled someone. I'm not sure that the internet was doing that kind of stuff back then. Like, and she definitely didn't have any kind of technical experience. Like, she was just there with a little tape machine that you could record your thing on. No, it was very strange. And that has definitely made me more open to things that are not normal.
Fair enough. Do you have any tattoos and are any planned?
Oh, I've got this one. Says everything happens for a reason. I've got that with my besties at uni. They have it the same writing, but just slightly different, more feminine, obviously. And I've got a turtle on my leg. Again, my uni friends, we went on holiday together, got a turtle. I would love tattoos. I'd love a whole sleeve. I'd love leg tattoos like you've got, but I'm such a wimp. I hate pain. I hate it. I can't do it. I've got more plans, but whether they actually happen or not, I'm not sure.
Yeah. What superpower would you have?
I would have... can I have two? I want two.
One. Surely. Go on.
No, I want to heal, so I could heal my bad neck. I want to be like Wolverine. I want nothing to be able to kill me. I want to not be in pain, ever. So that's one. But two, if I could have another one, or one or the other, I would have time travel. I'd love to find out what happened in the past. Not even the future. I don't even want to know the future, but I would love to see like how the pyramids were built. I'm obsessed with things like pyramids. I would love to know if it was aliens or if it was like an advanced civilization. I would just love to be able to see what happened in the past and how we all evolved and where we came from.
Yeah, I would be with you on that one. I think that's the one I would have. Now, I know you know the way that I end all of these is I say that at the end, I've got a superpower and it is to allow you to speak to your dogs for 10 seconds or so. So what would you be telling them and which ones would you be telling what?
Well, God, I think Urban, I would just say, why are you barking all the time? Just why are you doing it? I'd like to know what he's scared of, what he's barking at. I'd just love to know why he's doing it, but also like tell him that you don't need to do it, it's fine, you don't need to be scared of anything. So that's Susan. I would just tell her that she's the cutest thing and she doesn't need to be scared of stuff. Fame, I just say you're the most perfect creature in the world, don't change. Same with 40. His boss, I would just say I love you because you're getting old. I would tell him all I love him. Commotion, I'd be like, why can't you see? Is it because you can't see? I'd like to know why he jumps like he jumps. Is it because you're panicking or because you can't see? I'd want to know. And then also that it doesn't matter because we'll just have fun and I love you anyway. And Boosty, I would just tell him, stop being so bloody horrible. Just stop it. Why are you being such a horrible little bastard all the time? Like, these dogs aren't going to be horrible to you. Just be nice to them.
Yeah.
They say you're a horrible little thing.
He's a little panicker.
But I still love him even though he's horrible. Huh?
He's a little panicker. He thinks they're out to get him.
Oh, he's just a little shit. He thinks everyone wants to get him, so he wants to get him first. I just say, just chill out. Like, stop being such a bipolar little bastard. So, yeah, with him, I just tell him, stop it. You're very irritating. But I still love him anyway, even though he's a little shit. But maybe try not to be.
Yeah, try do better. So that's the end.
Be nice.
Before we go, though, I know you've got a couple of exciting things that are coming up with regards to Nexus. We've spoken about that, and I think that's just a case of people keeping an eye out for it when it launches and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Firstly, though,
won't be long.
Tell people how they can follow you on social medias, and then are you going to tell people about the exciting changes coming up to the website? Or
Yeah, let's start with that. So my website is changing. I'm going to change to a subscription-based site. So you can get basically all my modules. So that's hopefully happening early next year. So getting all modules, and they're going to get the crew involved as well. So they're going to get not only all my modules for a monthly fee, they also get free access with it, the crew, which is on Facebook. And then they basically watch me train, ask questions. I post little course maps every week for the people to try. So they're going to get so much for their money. And then also there's a option you can have feedback, which can be a bit more expensive, obviously, because there's a lot of time taken with that. And they can get feedback and all that too. So that's cool. That's happening early next year. And I'm also posting a load more on social media. I'm going to be like a social media guru nowadays. So thanks to you, Kurt. You've been helping me. So, I'm posting on Instagram, QME Agility, on Facebook, on my QME page, and also on TikTok. Love a bit of TikTok. So yeah, I'm just posting lots of little training snippets and things to do with your dogs and inspirational quotes and all sorts of things like that. So if you want to follow me on any of those, get some little quotes and little tips for free, then go for it, because more followers the better.
Yeah. So I think the for people who aren't currently aware of what the website is and what it does, I think it needs a better explanation. So I'll do it for you. At the moment, Dave's website is all module based, and he's got lots of different courses on different skills in agility that are laid out progressively, so you can work through the videos one by one. And in the past, they have been charged per module. But the change that's come in means that you're paying a subscription per month, and then you get unlimited access to all of those. You can access them all at once. You can just work your way through them. But as well as that, then you get a place in the QME crew. And every week, Dave will set different sequences to train certain skills. And then as a group, you work through them, you talk through things, you can find out what you need work on. So you get a little bit of practical training with regards to in-sequence skills. But you also get the opportunity to work through specific modules to help specific skills too. That'd be right?
Yeah, and I want to build with... Yeah, perfect. I want to build with the crew like a real QME community where people help each other out and talk to each other, and they can post about their issues and see if anyone else has got the same thing. I want to build, because they get free access to the crew, I want to get loads of people on there and just get a real cool community going on. So we can all just help each other out. It'll be really good fun.
And that's hopefully happening in the new year. So people just need to keep an eye on your socials.
Keep an eye on the socials. Hopefully by Marchy time, once the website's been changed around a bit. So not long. I'm excited about it.
Cool. All right. Well, good work. Well done on being in the hot seat in a different kind of way this week. But do you want to say goodbye to everyone?
Bye, everyone. Have an amazing Christmas and see you all in the new year.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. See you soon. That is all for this episode, and actually that is all for this series. As always, I really hope you enjoyed this podcast, and I really hope you can share it with your friends and anyone else who you think might be interested. Just want to take this moment to remind you that we are looking for sponsorship. So if you know of anyone who might be interested in getting on board with this podcast, tell them to reach out and let me know. Have a brilliant Christmas, and I'll catch you in the new year.